On the show today, we're having a bit of a blast from the past where I'm going to feature one of my favourite parts of the conversation with Ben Hunt Davis, who was an Olympic gold medalist for the British rowing team. We had a very wide conversation about his whole life, really, which included, obviously, how he won the Olympics and different things as well. And what I'm going to feature today is my conversation with him around being an Olympian and the mindsets that you need and how you can have the maturity to kind of do this and approach these things when you're young and the sacrifices that you need to make or not make, as you'll hear in the conversation. And he's a very interesting individual who's really done very well with his life because he was able to recognize his weaknesses and realizing that he wasn't actually the strongest athlete out there and realizing where he really had to put the effort in and overcome his own limitations to become a gold medalist. And so I really think you'll enjoy this episode and a lot of lessons that go along with it. We start the interview with me asking Ben about mindsets and maturity. I pose a philosophical question around the fact that you're actually quite young when you become an Olympian and you need to start training when you're 16 or maybe much younger than that to really have a career between like 20 and 30 where you might actually possibly be able to win something. Whereas if you could be a world champion, let's say in your 40s or 50s, you're probably much more sure about what you're doing with your life and able to like dedicate yourself to something. And you probably understand growth mindset, your abilities, is just more down to just sticking at it and working hard as opposed to just something that you're sort of born with. Yeah, it was an interesting debate to start off with and kicked us off into the rest of the conversation. It's just a really good place to learn about mindsets and mastering things, which is the point of the entire podcast. So a very good conversation to be having on it.
One thing I've found is that like as you get older, you're a bit better at life planning and then you've had more experiences. So by like 30, let's say you hit your Olympics at a peak between 30 and 40 as humans. Do you think a lot more people would have like the potential to kind of go and do that? But because of it's at like 20 to 30, that like there's loads of people never actually realize that they would have the option because they're sort of lost in getting drunk and things.
That's kind of quite a good question, because I think that if you're a female gymnast, your peak is 16, 20 or something. If you're a female swimmer, it's kind of similar. I think I was lucky in that as a rower, I didn't have to take it seriously until I was 16. There are rowers who start at 20 and become Olympic champions, where you're a whole load more mature than you are as a teenager. And I think probably the younger you have to go through everything, probably the harder it is. Maybe you get more parental support. And I think there are lots of people who have got a whole load of natural physical ability, but at whatever age, they don't want it. They're not hungry. And that's a critical part.
Yeah, and I guess also like maybe kind of growth mindset, as in I guess I've got like super more into it. I've always had it, but never quite like realized quite how much you can kind of do anything. So if I put myself through some tests and sort of worked out what my like natural physical ability was, and I actually had 10 years to sort of put into it, like I feel like we'd be able to like focus and sort of become like a champion or something. But I'm 30, so it doesn't matter. So it's not really a chance anymore. But it took me like sort of almost 30 years to sort of work out that if you put focus into something, you'll get there. But do you think like at 20, you just maybe haven't realized that? Or
so I think at 20, I was willing to work hard. I was very, very happy to train my ass off. And being down at the training center at Leander Club in Henley was a great environment where it was easy to work hard. And I thought then that working hard was the answer. If I worked hard enough, it would be all right. Rather than if I learned fast. And the change that happened in the last 2 years of my rowing career was the learning bit, where we were just ruthless about making sure we were learning from every session rather than just working hard. And I wish I had started learning earlier in my rowing career, because I think I probably could have done better. Nice. So the maturity about learning rather than just working hard, when that comes, if that comes to people.
Yeah, because it's like, the 10,000-hour rule isn't quite a 10,000-hour rule. It's definitely like 10,000-hour of like deliberate practice rule, where you just always think about what's the hardest thing you can be doing and learning the most from.
And Anders, Anders Ericsson in his book, he doesn't say it's just 10,000 hours. It's a purposeful practice. And I think so often if we work hard at what we're doing and whatever job we're doing, we'll get better, which isn't necessarily the case. We just reinforce the habits we've got.
As a rower, then, what were the things that you were missing by just regularly rowing compared to when you then changed your mindset to try and learn? What were like the things that you picked up on?
The first 7 years, we did exactly what the coach told us to do. And the coach, a guy called Jürgen Grobler, who was coach Cruz to win Olympic gold medals in 72, 76, 80, 88, 92, 96, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012, 2016. He's quite good. And his program clearly worked. I mean, it's incredible. Jürgen ran an incredibly successful program. It just didn't work for us. We weren't good enough physically to get it to work for us. So when we moved training center to set up our own base, probably 75-80% of the training that we did was Jürgen's program, maybe more. But we approached it pretty differently. Before every session, we'd get together and go, specifically, what are we trying to achieve this session? And in order to achieve that, what are the changes we need to make? And so when we talk about rhythm, let's be really, really clear. Specifically, what do we mean and which bit of it we're trying to change? And we'd have proper, detailed conversations, getting granular about the ingredients that go into whatever it was we were working on, so we could then have a chance to improve. Rather than beforehand going, right, it's 20K, we'll do 20 kilometers, 18 strokes a minute, heart rate this, off you go. That's just a physical session. It's got nothing to do with improving rowing technique. What we needed to do was, well, because physically we weren't that good, we needed to be physically as good as we could be, but technically we wanted to be the best crew in the world. And we wanted to be the most resilient group, and we wanted to be the best team.
So did it take losing a few times to work out that you just physically were never going to be able to be the best?
It took losing a lot of times. I lost a lot, and it took a bit of time to work out that actually just training harder wasn't going to work out. Generally, we learn stuff when we're ready to learn it. And would I have been open-minded to learn it 2 years earlier, 4 years earlier? I don't know. Maybe the opportunity wasn't there. Maybe people weren't talking to me about it. Maybe it was all right there in front of me, but I chose just to work harder.
Yeah, I read Frank Dick's book when I was like 14, 15, and was just like, wow, this is just all like sort of stupid quotes that like make sense and like are so easy. Like, I do all of these things. And then like I read it again like last year. I was like, holy shit, I've made all of these mistakes in my life. And like sort of like actually went in that time and like, crap, I'll actually do this properly kind of thing.
All the stuff about growth mindset, about continuous improvement, the theory behind it is all really, really simple common sense. But common sense isn't common practice. And it's actually really hard to do. Reviewing every single thing, every single session you do, meeting you come out of, what worked, what didn't, what am I going to do better tomorrow? It's actually quite hard to do. So I think the first thing to do is always to go, okay, so what worked? What was I really good at? What did I do really well? Because firstly, you need to know what you're good at so you can repeat it. If always you're coming out going, oh, what didn't work so well, then you're not kind of shining a light on the stuff that you need to keep repeating. You're just looking at the stuff that's not so good. So for us, it was really important to start with what was good, what worked well, what did I do well, what did we do well, whatever the question is, to highlight actually what you are good at to make sure you can keep repeating it. But also, it then builds belief because you've got this whole load of stuff that actually we are really good at, and then you're going to pick holes in the stuff you're not so good at. And what do we do differently next time? That might be, okay, so let's actually just continue to develop the strengths, or it might be let's work on the weaknesses, or you know, who knows? You know, it gives you a whole lot of choices.
Yeah, you can get a bit obsessed in life of just like fixing your weaknesses when actually you get a lot more gains from like working
being really
on your strengths.
Good at your strengths. You know, I think being aware of both is really important. And presumably with most of us in our roles of whatever we do, whether it be in sport or work, presumably we do most of it pretty well, because if not, we wouldn't be doing it. So if we were just to focus on getting better at the things we're good at, it would make a reasonable impact. I think you've also got to be aware of the bits you're rubbish at. So you should have a choice of, you know, which end of the spectrum do you work on?
I guess you work out like what's
needed at the time, what the balance is. Yeah.
What's holding you back. That's very, very logical and, yes, not the most common practice. With all, will it make the boat go faster? Which is what led to the title of your book.
Yeah, we were just, the whole time we were asking ourselves in the crew, you know, what are you going to do? Is it going to make the boat go faster? Doing this, will it make the boat go faster? Doing that? Because we couldn't control winning. All we could do was control boat speed. So therefore, boat speed was the most important thing. So therefore, we had to do stuff that would make the boat go faster.
Yeah, these things sort of seem to work with anything, like whether you're just doing like learning an instrument, business, relationships and stuff.
The thinking should apply.
So do you find it Have you ever applied it to your relationships and things, or does it come across a bit calculated when you're like, oh, this date didn't go so well, like, let's assess what worked. Okay, well, what didn't work?
So the doing it in a formal way with my wife doesn't work, but the number of evenings we've had where we go, oh, you know what I said to my son or my daughters, whatever, that didn't work. I've got to try and approach that situation differently. Or, you know, coming, you know, getting to the evening going, what a great day we had. What, you know, how do we manage to make it work so well? How do we manage to advise my daughter actually so she listened? You know, how do we do that again? Because it's quite hard to do. I don't necessarily do it in such a formalized way at home, but I absolutely do. Because there are conversations we have that work and there are conversations we don't. And when they don't, I want to try and do it better next time. I want to, you know, if we've had a great evening as a family sitting around the dinner table, then, you know, I want to try and make sure
you can recreate it.
We recreate it, yeah.
It seems a bit wrong to be like analytical about things, but it's actually really good.
But why not?
Relationships.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Because if, you know, there are certain things I know that will piss my daughters off and close them down.
Yeah.
And if I'm not aware of what those things are, then I'll continue to piss them off and close them down and have a shit relationship. Whereas if I actually want to, you know, be a good husband and a good father, why wouldn't I want to try and learn from my mistakes and learn from what, you know, the few little bits that I do reasonably well? I think it kind of should apply to
life everywhere.
And now a few words from our beloved sponsor who helps keep the show running. Today, many small businesses are busier than ever because they are focused on managing and growing their business. They can't always spend the time that they wish they could on recruiting. That's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to find and hire the best candidates for free. I personally had some hires blow up in my face when I hadn't do enough background checking, and I wish I'd done that, and it's much easier to do on LinkedIn, for example. So you can get started by posting your job for free to reach LinkedIn's network of 740 million professionals. You can fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation that you need. Then use simple tools to filter and prioritize the top candidates that you would like to interview. LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role, and your first job post is free. Just visit linkedin.com/growth. Again, that's linkedin.com/growth to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. And now back to the show.
You then eventually managed to win the gold having done this. How did that feel?
Quite good.
Did you feel like you completely deserved it?
So, do we deserve it? It's an interesting question. So it depends what you mean by deserve. So we had trained as hard or harder than anyone else. We had put in the hours the same as anyone else. Why should somebody else deserve it over us? Sitting there from a space of going, we deserve it, you know, I've done nothing and I deserve to win, is utter rubbish. But sitting on the start line, everybody was sitting there up for it. We had five crews alongside, one on one side and four on the other side. You know, everybody, you know, we'd done as much or more, who knows, as anyone. Why didn't we deserve it? And it was incredible. I was in the national team 9 years, and the very first race I won was 15 weeks before the Olympic final, which means I lost everything else I did.
Wow.
And to finally get it right. And the last 2 years were different. The last 2 years, we actually came second in everything we did. The year of the Sydney Olympics, we came second in the first race, and we won the next three. You know, losing heats and stuff along the way, but we won the races, the finals that counted. So that's a lie. There's what, Henley Royal Regatta, 13 weeks, 12 weeks, four. Can't remember how long we lost there. But we won, you know, we won the two big regattas leading up to the Olympics. So sitting there, yeah, we were confident. Yeah, we were up for it. Yeah, we had deserved it as much as anyone else. The World Championships here before we came second. We rode a pretty good race. We had a plan of how to beat the Americans. And as it was at the end, where we thought we had changed gear and pissed off and beat them, they changed gear and pissed off and beat us. And they were just better than us. The year of the Sydney Olympics, the first regatta, we messed up in the final and we came second behind the Croatians, and that was kind of fair enough. Vienna, we rode actually not that well, but we beat everybody. Lucerne, we, with a reserve on board, we rode pretty damn well and we beat everybody. in the heat of the Olympics, we lost to the Aussies. We rode really badly and we lost to them. I think they would say if you rode the race 100 times, they would win it 80% of the time or something. Yeah. And we would say the same thing. They'd beaten us twice that year. We beat them twice that year. And then it was all on the line in the Olympic final. We knew that when we rode well, we were really, really fast. And on that day, we rode really, really well. And we laid down every single drop of passion, aggression, and energy with the technique that we'd worked so hard on. And we put together for us a perfect race.
Nice. Well, obviously, congratulations.
It was a good day at the office.
But what do you think would have happened in the rest of your life if you hadn't won? Because you technically still have all the same lessons from, like, will it make the boat go faster stuff, but you think you'd have been able to, like, write that book and sort of start this thing?
No.
Yeah.
So I came away from the Olympics, being in the national team for 9 years and having won the Olympics. And I then started trying to work out what the hell to do next. And I thought maybe some sort of corporate training. I didn't really know what it was, but maybe that would be interesting. And I called all sorts of people. And when I said, I've come back from the Olympics, I won, everyone was happy to talk to me. I eventually found somebody who was happy to talk to me and then actually give me a job. But if I had have come back and said, oh, well, I came seventh again, not many people would have spoken to me. And you know, I do a lot of speeches these days. And for me to stand up and tell a great story about how we came seventh, not many people would want to listen to. People want to hear from somebody who's won rather than a loser. And also, if I had have lost again, I wonder whether I'd be quite bitter. Having put 9, 10, 11, depending on how you count it, years of my life into it, if I had have just lost everything, I think I might be quite bitter about stuff.
It's a bit of a danger because if you want to be really inspiring to maybe kids and make them sort of follow their dreams into the Olympics, but also you could waste 10 years of someone's life if they only ever come fourth and fifth or something and they never really have anything to write home about and they just focus on stuff and maybe they could have had a great career doing something else that they've missed out on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a massive risk.
Yeah.
You've got to put yourself out there to have a go and who knows how well you do it. And also, it depends on expectations. If you come back from the Olympics having come 27th in the marathon, got a personal best, you should be delighted. Our expectations were that we could be fast enough to win. And therefore, that became all-consuming, and the result was about winning. For some people, really high expectations are about competing and coming home with a kit. And that's fine. We all compete at our different levels. But there's a massive risk involved to all this stuff. If you want to achieve whatever your dream is, then you've got to put yourself out there. And yeah, I don't know how balanced I would be if I had have just put my heart and soul into everything and lost everything I ever did. I may not be that balanced or happy. So thank God I did.
Yeah, definitely. That's
Well, I really enjoyed listening back to that from the archives with Ben. And if you want to hear the full episode, you can. It's just if you search for Ben Hunt Davis and under the podcast, you'll find the full episode. And of course, the other thing to remember is that you can chat to me anytime in Reason FM, the podcast player, where I am being very social. And that's what I built the whole podcast player for. And you're very welcome to come join me there. And on that, that's the end of the show. I hope you have a lovely time listening to your next episode, and do remember to pause just to quietly reflect on some of the things, and remember that common sense is not common practice, and that we are all probably being very stupid in our own ways. And on that, goodbye.